From Michigan Radio, this is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty.
The other passengers there reluctantly gave up their seats, but I refused to do so.
If our cities go down, in my opinion, our nation will go down.
You have to think about your dream and what you want to do.
All we were trying to do was just get music for all people.
The moose are coming, the moose are coming. That might not have been actually chanted, but it was the feeling across much of the Upper Peninsula as Michigan completed reestablishing moose population in the UP. It is Wednesday, which means it's time to talk about Michigan's history with our partners at the Michigan History Center. Here with us now is Rachel Clark, back from the Michigan History Center. Hey, Rachel.
Hi.
And we have retired DNR wildlife veterinarian Steve Schmidt. Welcome, Steve.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So happy to talk about moose. Rachel, before the arrival of Europeans, where did moose live in Michigan?
Moose were pretty much all over Michigan prior to the arrival of Europeans. There was a small section of southwestern Michigan that didn't have the same population numbers, but moose are pretty much all over Michigan at that time.
And what led to the decline of the population in our state?
As people were moving into Michigan and settling, they're overhunting the moose and also they're destroying essentially the moose's habitat. So as they're clearing out the woods to create farms and those landscapes, they're destroying the moose habitat. So the moose are either dying or moving.
So what kind of time frame are we looking at? Over what period of time?
From settlement era, which we sort of look at from anywhere from 1805 to 1835 when we become a state, or write our constitution rather. And then all the way up to 1935 is when there are the first efforts to repopulate the Upper Peninsula with moose.
And Steve, how did that go?
Not so well.
Why?
Well, one of the most important was deer had a biological weapon, basically a parasite called brainworm that doesn't cause a problem in the deer, but when it gets into the moose, it will kill them. As they cleared the forest up north, the deer population was able to increase, and that adversely affected the moose population.
So I want to drill down now on this second moose translocation, because as you say, the first one did not go so well. So now take us up to the second moose relocation. When was that?
That was in the middle 80s. Basically, we moved moose in 1985 and 1987. The idea there was that the habitat was changing, becoming more advantageous to moose. Moose were already there when the Europeans came in, so we knew, you know, we could bring them back if we reintroduced some, and that was the idea behind it. We had a real good group of people over in Ontario, the Ministry of Natural Resources, and they thought it was a good idea too, so we made it happen.
Moving moose from Ontario, whereabouts, where did you get them from?
Algonquin Park.
Sure.
Yeah, it's a big provincial park. It's as well visited as national parks in Canada. That park had an overabundance of moose, and so they were happy to have us capture some and move them to Michigan. And we actually did a little bit of a trade. We gave them some wild turkeys.
Okay. You can have some of our wild turkeys. We'll take some of the of your surplus moose.
Exactly.
I want to talk about the logistics of this. First of all, how big, how heavy is a full-grown moose?
An average size for a cow would be 900 to 1,000 pounds, and the bull's up to 1,200 pounds.
Okay, so this is not just, hey, try to board the little trailer and we'll truck it across.
No.
We're talking about a big, heavy animal. So you were a key part of this second moose relocation. What did it take to get the moose from Ontario to the Upper Peninsula?
Well, it took a lot of effort and a lot of people involved, both with the Michigan DNR and the Ontario Ministry of Natural Resources. Start out over in Algonquin Park with a helicopter, basically a capture gun, shooting out of the helicopter, tranquilizing the moose, putting them in a sling, lifting them up, taking back to a processing area where we had crates, where the animals could be put in the crates. And then at the end of the day, truck drivers would head out and drive all night long and to the release site in the UP.
Now, there was some helicopter action here.
Oh, yes, a Hughes 500 chase helicopter, and I was lucky enough to be in that using a potent narcotic called carfentanil. And we would spot a moose, usually in some hardwoods, move them out into a frozen lake where I could get in close with a helicopter.
Okay.
In fact, the shooting was the easy part. It was a helicopter pilot. He had the hard work of getting me in close. Then it was kind of point-blank range. You dart the animal, and then he also had to keep that animal out on the frozen lake, out on the ice, which though it had some snow cover, maybe a foot of snow, for 7 to 10 minutes for the drugs to take effect and the animal to go down. And that was harder than it sounds. Those animals wanted to get back into the woods, and so he had to drop down below tree line, very close to the moose, keeping it out on the lake. Until it became immobilized.
And then they were put on slings and transported to where they, as you say, could be crated and trucked to Michigan. Actually, anybody could go to YouTube and watch the video. It is quite stunning to see this moose being in its sling, being carried through the air. How taxing was all of this for the animal, Steve?
There's no doubt there's a lot of stress involved. First, we were hazing them out of the woods. Then we were using a potent narcotic that's about 50,000 times more potent than morphine. Then you're flying them through the air for possibly 15 minutes, putting them in a crate, giving the reversal drug so they'd stand up, and then driving them all night long. So yes, a lot of stress. So we had to monitor these animals all the time. And at least out on the frozen lake, it was temperature. Hmm. We would monitor that temperature. It should be about 101 normally. If it got up to 104.5, then I'd say, okay, we're not going to take it. We'd put an ear tag in the animal, give the reversal drug, and let it go.
Mm. It was a hardy lot that made it to the UP.
Yes.
And how many in total were you able to move during these the relocation, this second relocation?
29 in 1985 and 30 in 1987.
Rachel Clark, what was the local reaction in the UP to getting moose back in there again?
Oh, people were really excited. Every time a crew came back into the Marquette area with the moose, there were crowds of people there to watch them released and go off into the woods. So people were very excited, not only to see moose. I've lived in Michigan my whole life. I've camped in the UP. I have yet to lay eyes on a moose.
Hmm.
I don't know that I've known anyone other than Dr. Schmidt who's actually seen a moose. So, so people were really excited, not only to see them, but the idea that they're back in the UP.
Something like 10,000 people saw those animals released over the week time that, you know, there would be a release every day. The governor was up there one day, and they would bring busloads of school kids, you know, from the local area.
Indeed. Dr. Schmidt, how is the moose population doing today? I know you have retired as DNR wildlife veterinarian, but that wasn't that long ago. How are they doing?
Well, there's about 350 moose. Now, that's a lot less than what we had hoped to have. We've had some issues with basically the cows becoming pregnant, and also the twinning rate for our moose was less than what it is in many parts of North America. But there's something going on in the moose population in the southern part of the range.
And when we're saying that southern part of the range, what are we talking about?
The border of Canada and the U.S., in some places having a lot more issues than we are.
Hmm.
Some of them, areas have had dramatic declines. Minnesota is one, Maine another. And they're not sure what is going on. Minnesota has a big study, and it looks like it's a number of things. The brain worm that I mentioned earlier, liver fluke is another one. Winter ticks have a factor. The temperatures, these animals are cool, loving animals, so hot summers are not good for them. That also helps increase the parasites like the winter ticks. Nobody knows for sure, but it looks like it's a combination of factors that is adversely affecting moose populations in the southern part of the range. Now, there's examples, Isle Royal.
Huh.
As you all know, we only have two wolves out there, and the moose population is exploding. So we don't understand exactly what's happening with these moose populations on the southern part of the range.
What's your long-range forecast, do you think, Steve, for moose in the UP?
Well, I've got my fingers crossed. You know, it was one of the most interesting and challenging and then rewarding activities that I got to do as the veterinarian for the Michigan DNR. So I've got my fingers crossed that we're, you know, kind of stabilized and possibly, you know, we'll start to increase again like we did when we first released the animals.
And Rachel Clark, you can keep hoping, right, as you camp, that you will one day clap eyes on a moose.
I am always hopeful.
Thank you. Thank you so much. The Michigan History Center's Rachel Clark and retired DNR wildlife veterinarian Dr. Steve Schmidt. We want to thank you for sharing with us the story of Michigan's moose reestablished population dropped right in there to the Upper Peninsula. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
It was a lot of fun.